This podcast is intended to support UK healthcare professionals with education. The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment, and patients are encouraged to consult healthcare providers, including nurses, for any medical questions or concerns.
Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional, where healthcare professionals and experts by experience discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice. I'm Hannah Patterson. I've worked in specialist care and I'm currently the Ostomy Care Associate Education Manager at Coloplast. This time I am joined by five experts by experience for Ask the Ostomate Part 2.
Hi, I'm Yvette. I've had an ileostomy for 11 years due to ulcerative colitis.
Hello, I'm Sophie. I've got a stoma, which is an ileostomy. I've had it for, it's going to be 4 years next month, and that is due to ulcerative colitis and serrated polyposis syndrome.
Hello, my name's Peter. I'm an ileostomy patient. I had a ileostomy due to ulcerative colitis.
Hello, my name is Brian. I've had a colostomy and a stoma since 2017 as a consequence of long-term perianal fistula disease.
Hello, I'm Ben. I've got an ileostomy, which I've had for just over 2 years due to Crohn's disease.
Hello and welcome. And thank you so much, my lovely panel, for joining me. Now, those of you listening may be aware that recently Coloplast and a lot of other people attended the WCET and ASCN conference up in Glasgow. So that was the World Council of Enterostomal Therapists and the Association of Stomacare Nurses. And that was up in Glasgow. Now, last year in Brighton, I went round and I asked some of the stoma nurses around some questions for them to pose to ostomates. So we flipped the script a little bit. And it was so well received by you guys listening and by our experts by experience, I decided to do it again. So I hunted down some nurses and I got some fantastic questions to pose to my wonderful little panel. So, without any further ado, I'm going to start off by playing a question from Ashley.
Hi, my name's Ashley and I'm from the Royal Lancaster Infirmary. Has your interpretation of stomas changed since your surgery? And if so, has it been a positive or a negative?
Ooh, good question. So I think, Ben, I'm going to come to you first with that one.
Yeah, I'd say my understanding has definitely changed quite a lot. I mean, I had had Crohn's disease for quite a long time before sort of realizing that I was probably going to need a stoma. And it'd been quite mild for such a long time that I just never imagined that I would need one. And I think I just buried my head in the sand. It was kind of like out of mind, out of sight kind of thing. So I suppose going into it, it wasn't until being told it was a possibility that I really started to research and learn more about them. And I still was kind of a bit blind going into the process, I suppose. And so sort of you go through it and you learn so much. But it's not just the physical side as well, it's the emotional side of it. And I think that was something that I wasn't kind of anticipating. It was probably about a year and a half later after the surgery, I sort of hit a bit of a mental brick wall with things and had to go get some therapy because I think everything just kind of was quite overwhelming at that point. And I hadn't really anticipated that, that long delay as well. So I'm definitely now a lot more understanding, a lot more positive about stomas and kind of what they are and how they can mean different things to different people for the different reasons and causes they've had them too. Something that, again, you learn as you go along and you talk to other people. So yes, been a very positive learning experience.
Really good. Thanks, Ben. And Brian, I'm going to come to you for that because obviously you've had your stoma for a different reason compared to a lot of our panel.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about stomas in my health journey, really, because it's an unusual perianal fistulas over 25 years basically caused a lot of scarring, which was going to result in bowel incontinence. So I got to the stage where I was beginning to panic and I've got a very, very good relationship with my colorectal surgeon up here in Inverness. And we had tried everything, all the different procedures. He was absolutely brilliant. And then we had the conversation one day, which had sort of, I think, probably prompted myself. So I was kind of desperate. And what I noticed after about maybe 2 or 3 weeks, a friend came in who was a nurse, and she said, I bet you can't remember the last time you felt well. And that kind of turned it on its head for me, because, yeah, it is a little bit, obviously, of a big bit of a lifestyle change. I don't think there's any two ways about it. And it's not something that you would want to do simply for the sake of it. But for me, it really helped me. And it really made me accept that this was a minor inconvenience compared to what I had been experiencing before. The pain had gone. And I, what was going through my mind before I got the operation was how to do things like change bags and all that sort of stuff. And very, very quickly, it becomes very, very clear and very easy to do. So it's helped me tremendously.
Fantastic. Thanks, Brian. And then, Yvette, how about you? Because obviously being female, slightly different, maybe thoughts there.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, what Brian said there. You know, that resonated with me about the, you know, the remembering the last time you felt well. You know, I just plodded along because I'd been so poorly for so long. And then it was only when after I had my surgery that I came to realise, oh, actually, I feel so much better in myself. So, yeah, my initial interpretation of having a stoma was a bit, oh, how's it going to work, you know, with clothing and all that kind of thing. But similar, you know, to what Ben said, is that I always knew that it was going to be a possibility from, you know, maybe 7-8 years before I actually ended up having a stoma. So I always knew it was going to be a possibility. So I had a bit of an idea what it was going to be like, but I didn't really truly know how much it was actually going to change my life for the better. Initially, when they were telling me, oh, you know, you'll have to empty your bag about 6 to 10 times a day. And at that point, before I had my stoma, I was thinking, well, that's no better than what I'm already doing. I'm going to the toilet that many times a day. So how is that better? But it was only when I actually got the stoma that I came to realise, actually, this is better than what I had been living with.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Ashley, for the question. Really good there and really good responses, guys. Thank you. And our next question is from Sally.
Hi, I'm Sally. I'm from Furness General Hospital. How easy did you find the Halo system to use, and would you recommend it?
Oh, a Halo question. I knew there'd be one in there somewhere. Now, I know I've got a few of you guys that use Halo here, and I'm probably dying to get your answer in on this one. So I'm going to come to you first. Sophie, how about you?
Oh, I think we all know that Halo is my absolute best friend. Like, I'm the biggest advocate for Halo now. It's unreal. I found it so incredibly easy to use. Obviously, for me, like, the learning curve was minimal because you've got step-by-step guide, the app that you get with it. So getting it all up and running was, you know, dead easy and simple to do. And it has, yeah, it's just become part of my daily routine. I don't even realise now that I'm using it. You know, it's just it's just part of my bag change. It's part of my normal routine just to pop it on, check the app. But the peace of mind it's offered me is just absolutely game changing, especially for my mental health. Like, as everyone knows behind the scenes, that was all part of it. It was, unfortunately for me, it was my mental health that was impacted by the effect of leaks. So I was fortunate enough not to be affected so much by leaks, but it was the worry. And yeah, it's just helped me like you wouldn't believe. So I am going to shout about it until everybody hears.
Of course, we've got another, I would say, member of the Halo fan club in you as well, Peter, haven't we? As I know, we recently did a podcast together talking about your experiences with Halo. So what would you say in answer to Sally's question?
Yeah, I think I'd thoroughly recommend a Halo device. It's incredibly good. It was very easy to set up. As Sophie mentioned, step-by-step instructions with little video snippets of how to set the product up. I use it on a daily basis. I find that I don't have to change my bag as often now. So obviously a better cost saving. Yeah, so highly recommended. Big change in my routine, and I don't worry about leaks or anything anymore.
Fantastic. Now, I know, Ben, you trialled Halo at one point as well, didn't you? So I'd just be interested to hear what your opinions are as well.
Yeah, so I suppose my experience is a little bit different because I'm no longer using Halo. For me, it was, yeah, like Sophie, I wasn't really experiencing leaks, but I get those kind of sensations and I was worried that I was getting them. So the anxiety that was there and just that sort of constant worry. And so for me, I found it really easy to use once I had actually followed all the instructions properly and wasn't like a kid in a candy shop and just sort of rushed in, which was happened at first. I was just too excited. But yeah, I think once you follow the app, I found having the app up and the instruction book open at the same time, the combination of the two just made it so clear to follow step by step in terms of what you had to do. The actual applying of the product was really simple, really easy. Yeah, you know, I was worried about like, having a shower and sort of damaging the transmitter and all those kind of things. And it was not a single instance where I forgot to take it off. It was just all very intuitive and just became very much part of the sort of day-to-day life. But for me, it gave me that confidence that I wasn't having leaks, and those sensations were just sensations and they were nothing to be worried about. It gave me the confidence that my current setup worked for me. So yeah, it just gave me the ability just to get on with life on an everyday basis. So I kind of just came to the conclusion that it did what I needed it to do at that point in my life. I perhaps may need it again if things change, but I know it's there and I know it's an amazing product that is easy to use.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Ben. And thank you to Sally as well. And our next question is from Debbie.
Hi, it's Debbie from Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital. I'm clinical nurse specialist in stoma care. I would like to ask all of the stoma patients, what is the most important thing I can do for them pre-op and post-op?
Ooh, another good question. Yvette, what would you say about this?
I think for pre-op, I would say take your time, be patient with the patient, because as a stoma nurse, it's very much a case of they're doing this day in, day out. It's nothing new to them. Whereas us as a patient, it's the first time we might have even ever heard of a stoma. So take your time, be patient, offer someone to talk to who is very much in the same boat as that patient. I found myself that all I really wanted to do was talk to, I was 31 at the time, just talk to a young mum who'd been there and done that, and could reassure me that actually it was going to be okay. But post-op, check in often. I found that the questions that maybe they'd said to me, you know, as I was leaving hospital, do you have any questions? They didn't come until maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. So check in often with the patient and make sure that, you know, any burning questions that they've had at 3 o'clock in the morning are answered. And then maybe even further down the line, offer something like, you know, links to local support groups, if the patient feels that, you know, that might be something that would benefit them.
Lovely. Thanks for that, Yvette. And how about you, Brian?
For me, one of the biggest problems since getting my stoma has been a peristomal hernia, and I've had 2 or 3 of those. And I would like to have known more about them, because I'm not a medical person, so I didn't really know what a hernia was. And then eventually I was told I had one, and I looked it up in Google and I was horrified. And it is very, very difficult. So pre-surgery, I think it would be good to go into an in-depth investigation or exploration about the sorts of risks post, just around about the operation time, about developing a hernia. I remember getting a terrible coughing bout on the ward just after I got my stoma, and shortly after that I was diagnosed with the peristomal hernia. So maybe some practical advice about putting a pillow over your tummy when you're coughing and stuff like that. And maybe post, I've done some work on strengthening core muscles, again, to try to prevent the peristomal hernia developing. It didn't work with me, but I do think that the exercises that I went through would help a lot of people. So I think referral into some of the work that's been done around building up your core would be a very, very useful exercise for patients.
Yeah, really good point there, Brian. I think it's really good point there that you mentioned that both pre and post-op as well. So it's looking at a prevention technique as well as managing what happens. So yeah, really, really good point. Thanks, Brian. And thank you very much to Debbie for the question. The next question is from Amy. And Amy, yes, there are two Amys here.
My name's Amy Fish and I'm one of the clinical nurse specialists from New Cross Hospital, Wolverhampton.
And my name's Amy Sharkey and I'm the associate practitioner from New Cross Hospital at Wolverhampton.
So as a stoma patient, we'd like you to know if there's anything that you would change within the service.
Or if you could recreate the service yourself, what service would you make as a stoma patient, knowing how effective services are within the NHS and in the private sector too?
I feel like a can of worms open everywhere. Who do I come to with it? Sophie, I'm going to come to you simply because working for the NHS, I think you've probably got quite a practical mindset on this as well.
That was such a juicy question. Exactly like that. You could literally just obliterate with answers, couldn't you? So yeah, great question to Amy's. I think, firstly, the service could improve by offering sort of more of a tailored, holistic approach, like support right from the beginning, right from when you're told you're going to get a stoma. The NHS and the private sector obviously both do a fantastic job of providing medical care. We all know that, but there is a gap when it comes to the emotional and long-term wellbeing support. And you know, the more and more people I talk to that live with stomas, it just seems everyone's got the same story. And it makes me want to rattle the NHS and just be like, come on, like, and private, just listen to what we're saying that we need, because they just don't seem to do it. So if I could recreate the service, I'd change loads. But I would love to see stoma patients offered more of an ongoing education, like mental health support, regular check-ins post-surgery, because unfortunately, it was just my experience. I got nothing post-surgery at all. So definitely regular check-ins. And then maybe even like partnering with other companies, i.e. like corporate companies like Coloplast, to ensure that there's better aftercare. Because I think something could be bought in there where, you know, stoma suppliers could help provide sort of like a wellbeing service. But yeah, there's a lot of potential to bridge the gap between the NHS and private. So yeah, I think that way they'd be able to offer a better experience. So just let me run the NHS.
That's simple as that, really, isn't it? Yeah. I'd like to come to you with this one as well, Brian. Obviously, being from Scotland, I'm really interested to see what your view on this is as well.
Yeah, I vote for Sophie to run the NHS. So I live in the north of Scotland, in the middle of nowhere, basically. My close relative is the Loch Ness Monster. I live up in the mountains. And my council area is the size of Belgium. So that's the council. If you don't know how big Belgium is, it's the size of Wales. So that's a comparison. We've got one major hospital. So people are travelling hundreds and hundreds of miles here on very, very small, often one-track roads to get to and from appointments. So this might not make me very popular with stoma nurses. But one way that I would shake things up is I would like to see much more integration with primary care. I think stoma nurses engaging with practice nurses, community nurses, perhaps teaching them skills around managing skin issues, managing minor blockages, dietary issues around stoma care, you know, because it is where people go. People go to the primary care facility and I don't think there is much of a connection between stoma nurses and primary care, and I think that would help, particularly in rural areas, but I suspect everywhere. The second thing is a particular bugbear of mine, but I just want to try it out with you. In the hospitals that I visit, the disability toilets are a disgrace within NHS facilities. And I used to be a director within the NHS up here. So I would like to propose that stoma nurses take a visit round every disabled toilet within the hospitals or the units that they work in and find out how many of them are actually set up for stoma care. And I think you probably will be. I am horrified by the state of ours. And I would like to see stoma nurses write to the chief executive or the head of nursing in each of the trusts and say that you, on behalf of your patients, we'd like to propose this very simple request. So I'll laid out there the guidelines about what makes a disabled toilet stoma friendly and hold them to account like that. So two practical suggestions.
No,
Sophie will be in charge, so she can...
Are you writing it all down, Sophie? Are you writing it down?
Yeah, I'm making notes, don't worry.
Thank you, guys. Two really, really good responses there. And despite the fact from very different areas, a lot of crossover in what you're saying there as well. A lot of crossover with what you said there. So thank you, guys. And thank you to Amy and Amy. Colourplus Professional offers a lot of educational material for specialist nurses and healthcare professionals. Visit colourplusprofessional.co.uk to find out more. And our next question is from Faye.
Hi, my name's Faye. I work in London. And my question for an ostomate would be, did your stoma nurse talk to you about sex? And if they didn't, how would you have liked them to bring it up with you?
I'm very sorry, but there is only one person that I know that will answer this question and be as blunt as they want to be. Yvette, the stage is yours.
I'm not quite sure how to take that, but I'll take it the best way possible. So did my stoma nurse talk to me about sex? I wouldn't say she talked to me about it. I think it was just a fleeting single sentence in passing, almost as if she was a bit embarrassed to talk to me about it. But I think, you know, could I go back and you know, give my opinion as to how I would have liked to have been talked about it? Yeah. Just be honest. You know, talk to the patient about what underwear options are available, what support options, you know, support underwear is available. You know, obviously it's going to differ for, you know, males and females, but there are plenty of things out there to help in situations like that. You know, if the patient is a little bit embarrassed, maybe there is, should, or maybe there should be a booklet about just specifically about ostomies and sex. Just leave that on the side. It doesn't. You don't even have to have a conversation for, you know, patients who don't really want to engage in that kind of topic. But it can be just left there. But also, the other thing that I would think would be a really good idea would be not only speak to the patient, but speak to the patient's partner separately away from the patient, because you know, in the work that I do with the support group that I run, often we find, you know, the partner is really struggling and they don't know what to do. They, you know, they want to still find their partner with the stoma attractive, but they don't want to upset them. They don't know if they're in pain. They don't know what's the right thing to do. So maybe speaking to the partner separately and say, look, you know, this is okay. We can work around this. It's not a problem. That would be the best thing, you know, speak to both, you know, both parties in the relationship separately to make it easier and more comfortable for both of them.
Really good point there, really good. Because like you say, I think sometimes the partner's got more anxieties and concerns than potentially even the ostomate at that point. They're worried about hurting, especially if they've been very poorly in the run-up. You don't want to break them, things like that. And so, yeah, really good point. And it goes back to actually what we've said a couple of times, it's that more holistic overall approach, actually. And this is something that I'm noticing is almost constantly recurring throughout these answers here. It's going back to that holistic overall approach. Really, really interesting. So thank you, Yvette, and thank you for letting me throw you straight on the spot there with that one. And thank you to Faye as well. And then we've got our next question, I think, is from Julie.
Hello, my name's Julie Daly from Wexham Park Hospital in Slough. In relation to Halo, would it put you off having to share your data with a corporate company?
Ooh, well, I'll have to refer to my little Halo panel again, I think, here. So, Peter, what would you say on that one?
Like anything that you buy, it's good to have a customer service support. So I think by sharing your details with a corporate company that specialise in the Halo product is very useful to you and can provide you additional support as and when needed, whether it be technical support, help that you're having problems with leaks, or general update and hints and tips information. And having the peace of mind knowing that not only Halo's doing the job, but Halo's specialist team is also looking out for you as well and helping you along the way.
Brilliant. Thanks, Peter. And Sophie?
Definitely not. I would not be put off at all by sharing my details because, again, for me, the benefits of using Halo has way outweighed like any concerns of data sharing. as long as the company is being completely transparent with you about how they use the data and ensure that it's secure, then I'm comfortable with that. And I think that it's important for patients to feel like they're in control of their health. So if sharing data means companies like Halo, you know, Coloplast with Halo can provide a better service, then I'm all for it.
Great. And Ben, again, just think about your previous experiences.
Yeah, again, similar to what Peter and Sophia said, it's, you know, for something like Halo, I wasn't worried about it. I'm not worried about it at all. You need that sharing of information for the product to fully function. And like Peter said, to get the service out of it that actually makes a massive difference. You know, you start worrying about whether you've got the settings right or whatever, then it just made it so much more user-friendly to have that. So yeah, no concerns at all.
Really good point there. And again, it's that point that I think if there's a benefit to sharing your details, it by far outweighs and allays any concerns you might have over anything, really, doesn't it? If there's a benefit to it, it does completely flip that any concern on its head, really. But so thank you ever so much, Julie, for that question. And thank you guys for answering. And then, believe it or not, we're on the last question now, which is actually from one of our very own Coloplast nurses, the lovely Di.
Hi, I'm Di. I'm a Coloplast nurse. The question I'd like to ask is, what piece of information do you feel that was really, really important to you that you were never told in the very beginning when you had your stoma?
Really good question. Now, as it's the last one, I think I'm going to pose it to everybody. So I'm going to start off with you, Yvette.
The one piece of information that I wish I'd been told was to do with food. So in the beginning, I was given this really long list of things that I wasn't allowed to eat. And it wasn't really spoken about further apart from don't eat these. But the one piece of information that I would love to have been given was don't eat these for the first 3, 6, 8, 12 weeks, whatever. But actually, if you want to give them a go, give them a go. It's everybody's different. Each patient and each patient's stoma is completely different. And actually, you might be able to eat mushrooms. You might be able to eat sweet corn. You might be able to eat popcorn. But, you know, give the advice of, you know, chew really well, drink plenty, go a little bit at a time, trial and error, all of those things. And I really wish I spent ages absolutely petrified going anywhere near any of those foods just because I'd been told absolutely not, don't eat them. And when actually now I'm okay to eat things like mushrooms, you know, as long as I chew and drink plenty and take my time and not go and eat like 3 whole field mushrooms in one sitting.
Thanks, Yvette. And Sophie?
I wish someone had have told me, like back at the beginning, how much of a mental and emotional journey it was going to be, because you get, right in the early days, you get bombarded with information about the physical aspects of having a stoma and, you know, some of the complications that you might face, i.e. blockages, pancaking, you know, the bog standard stuff you can sort of find online. But you're not told, nowhere near enough, about the emotional challenges that you're going to face, sort of. And like Yvette says, from day one, going a week in, 2 weeks, a month, and so on. I'm still facing challenges, you know, emotional challenges 4 years down the line. Like it's, so it's, yeah, it's not just about learning to care for your stoma. It's about coming to terms with your new body image, which, you know, you guys all know. I know the stoma nurses that have asked these questions don't know, but I suffer really badly with body image issues. And so for me, that was a massive hurdle, was getting around the body image thing. And I just wish there was someone that would have supported me through that, like realizing that it's a change, but you're going to get through it. You're going to adjust to a new way of living. I do go back a lot of the time to mental health, and I just wish there was more focus and support on that from the start, because I just feel that is just as important, if not more important, than, you know, the physical recovery of stoma surgery. So, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah, definitely. And it goes back again. We're looking at that holistic approach again, aren't we? We're going back to looking at that again. So thanks, Sophie. Peter?
I think the piece of advice that would be really important was how simple it is to get a hernia from lifting or picking something up. I was told by my stoma nurse that I could no longer lift anything more than a 2-cup kettle, and later transpired that there's ostomy athletes out there, there's weightlifters out there, so hernia prevention and core strength would be a good point to raise.
Now, who better to follow on from that, Peter, than Brian?
Yeah, I agree with Peter and with Yvette and Sophie. I think the points are well made. All the good things in life, balloons, pancakes, have a totally different meaning when you're an ostomate. And I think that there's almost like you need a glossary because they should never have used these terms. No one explained to me what pancaking was when I phoned up the stoma nurse. So a little bit of tear around some of those things. The other thing that I struggle with still is the ostomates pass mucus from the rectal stump. Apart from me, it seems, because you know I have to go to hospital occasionally to get it all washed out. And that's an area for me that is not looked at by stoma nurses. And that's, I'm not being critical, it's not been my experience. So more around that, I think. And clarity about the sorts of language that we're, you know, taught at the very start.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot within education. We call it like fragmented language almost, where it can almost be a bit misconceptual, a bit misread along the way. So it's almost putting it a little bit more in simple layman's terms for people to make it easier to understand. And like you say, things like balloons and pancakes mean a lot different to what they did when you used to attend your birthday parties.
Yeah.
And then last but by no means least, Ben.
I think it's quite similar to Sophie, really. I had elective surgery. So whilst I sort of chose to do it, in reality didn't really have much choice, but at the time I didn't see it that way. And I saw it very much as I'm choosing to go and do this. And that then made me feel for quite a long time like I had to love my stoma. I had to love it every day. I had to be always constantly grateful for what it had given me. And I have had to learn that it's okay to have conflicted emotions about it. It's okay to have down days and, you know, for times where you just don't love it. And it's not great. At the end of the day, this is pun totally intended, we do have to carry a lot of baggage around with us. It's there 24/7, 365 days a year for the rest of your life. And that can be challenging, but that's okay. And that's normal to feel like that. And I guess I wasn't really kind of informed of that at the beginning, because again, there's that well-being link that's not there. You don't get teamed up with somebody else in your local area that's got a stoma. I think that's, for me, one of the missing links is, and I think I saw Yvette mentioned it, if you've not got a good support group in your area, which I don't really, you're just sort of left on your own. If it hadn't have been for me finding social media, I think I'd feel very different now than what I did. And what I do. So yeah, that mix of emotions that's natural.
Yeah, really good point there. And it is that, and I think it's that peer-to-peer support, isn't it? And that's something I think that you guys would all shout from the rooftops about with your, I know that, I mean, I've seen you guys, all the ambassadors, when you're in together in a room. It is like a bunch of superheroes. I mean, you can take your X-Men and scrap them, you know, these guys are like the new superheroes when you get them in a room together. Honestly, it's the energy in a room is just incredible when they're all in there together. And it is that support, that camaraderie of having people around you that you know get you and get where you're coming from. So I think that peer-to-peer is probably one of the big things that I'm going to pull from this myself, and hopefully a lot of people will, that's where we need to be heading. Get people talking to other people. And I'm a firm believer, a bit of cheesiness, problem shared is a problem halved sometimes. And actually having somebody to talk to can make life that little bit easier. Thank you so much, guys. It's been an absolutely great privilege to have you all on here. I know that some of you guys, this is not your first podcast with me, so thank you once again for joining me. And thank you for everyone for the questions. They've been absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure there's another one going to come next year now, because this one's just going to get legs and go, I think, because there's so many more things I think we've all got to say and hear out there. So thank you to my guests. Thank you to the nurses for the questions. And thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. To see more of the wide variety of education we offer, please visit coloplastprofessional.co.uk. See you next time.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is a Vibrant Sound Media production for Coloplast Professional.